prithee, good sirs.
What was that noise? Wow.
Oh, let me get more than three words out. Come on. I've got to commit to the bit. Sounded a bit different, didn't it? Hello, and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. Not Pocket Gamer iPhone and iPad gaming podcast, as has previously been the case. It's new music, and that means it's a new podcast. We said we're going to be doing it for a while, and this is the day. If you've downloaded this, you'll notice that there's new art, there's new sounds. It's a whole new thing, because when we started up the podcast, however many years ago it was pretty much an iOS-centric thing. The site was mostly focusing on the App Store and iOS because that was the biggest thing that was out at the time. Since then, though, if you look at Pocket Gamer, it's got all these different things on it. It's got iPhone, it's got Android, it's got Windows, it's got 3DSs and Vitas and Ouyas and all manner of stuff. And we thought it was about time that the podcast reflected the site. So that's what's going to happen now. But before you all freak out, especially everyone with an iPad and an iPhone going on, but I don't have an Android phone. What do I care what Android is doing, stupid bloody green robot thing? Don't worry, because we're still going to be talking about iOS stuff. In fact, there's probably quite a lot, because generally on the site, that's a lot of where the news comes from. But we have the freedom now. We're going to be talking about your 3DS games. We're going to be talking about your Vita releases. We're going to be talking about anything that falls under the mobile category. We are not hemmed in. And joining me for this brave new world, this step into the unknown, we have got Mr. Peter Wellington.
Hi.
We've got Senor John Jordan.
Hello.
And we've got, of course, Keith Andrew.
Hello. I feel like I should have changed.
I assume you're all wearing your ceremonial like bow ties and that, no?
You said robes.
Yeah, but just a bow tie.
Well, firstly, photos of those robes, please, John. Secondly, I'm going to be smashing a glass of champagne over this mic very soon. So if it suddenly cuts out and you hear the sound of screaming and electrical death, then you'll know why. Yeah, so it's just a little bit different. Don't worry, it's not going to be a completely new format or anything. You'll still recognize stuff as you go along, but some extra content will be coming your way, lovely listeners. Content like, we're going to be talking about Broken Age and the Kickstarter that is sort of being kickstarted again, but not quite. What are you doing, Tim Schafer, you weird man? We've also got stuff about The Walking Dead release dates. And I say dates because it's a bit of a mess out there. It's kind of confusing. And some word about the Ouyah, which is
That's not even a word, though.
It is now because someone kickstarted it. But first, let's look at this week's updates. First on the update, we have got the latest additions to Badland. We mentioned a while back that the day 2 update would be incoming, essentially kind of adding 10 more stages, 30 more missions, and 5 extra achievements to the core campaign. That has now landed. It's out right now. If you've got that game, go grab it. There's a whole load more content waiting for you. You can see a trailer up on the site right now. Go take a look. It's all yours. You can also get Ghost Trick Phantom Detective at a far lower price than it usually retails at. It's normally £6.99, or I think that's $9.99. Well, at the moment, you can get it for £2.99, or $5, which is kind of a bargain because it's one of those. It's a Capcom release, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes. It's a kind of quirky thing where you reverse time, you're a ghost, and you have to go back and alter events in order to either stop people from dying or something like that, isn't it?
You got to stop people from. You got to stop a man from murdering other people. Through ghostings, so
through ghost things,
through ghost things, and it was a DS release initially. So this is a Billy bargain.
It's the DS, and we rated it really highly. It's really good fun. I know Mark's a big fan of it, and I actually am going to download it right now. Well, not right now, obviously, because that's just a lie. But very soon, and play it because I've heard nothing but good things. So have a look at that. Also, if you are a real racing fiend, which you may be, I don't know. You can get a whole bunch of stuff. There's been a big old update. You get a Bentley and a Mercedes-Benz now. There has been a time trial mode added, so if you want to go and, I don't know, beat top scores, if you're one of those people chasing your numbers, then you can have at it. There's also more chances to earn R dollars. It's written as R dollars. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Is this real bucks? Is that what
real they are? Real dollars? Real racing dollars.
Obviously, when we say real dollars, we don't mean real dollars, because that would be brilliant. We mean real fake dollars.
But you can still spend them on cars.
Real fake cars, though.
Yeah.
This is very confusing. But there's also something that... What do you get? 180 new events. Damn.
Jeez.
And a new progression system, apparently, that enables you to unlock cars as you go through the career mode. Hmm. And there's also some talk about hackers. Apparently, there have been hackers targeting leaderboards and, like, switching up scores because people really care that much that they're faster in Real Racing 3 than you. But apparently, this update is hopefully clamping down on that a bit and will target obvious cheats and fake scores. So there you go. They were all iOS updates this week because that's where the updates have fallen. But there will be some information a little bit later on about your 3DS eShop and the Vita as well. But for now, the news. It's been a funny old week for Double Fine. Kickstarter's been a hot topic over the past year or so, really, as we've been following it since it's been pushed to prominence, and one of the games that kind of put it into the public eye was Broken Age, a project created by Tim Schafer that he put online, and he wanted $400,000 in order to fund this game. It was going to be a point-and-click adventure, kind of in the style of the games that Schafer used to produce, things like Monkey Island, stuff like that. He didn't get 400,000. He got 3 million in the end. It was, and that's what pushed it into the headlines. Got all this money, and they went, wow, we've got, look at all this extra money. We'll easily be able to make this game now. More than that, we could make 6 games, 12 games for this price. Fantastic. You leave it with us, and we'll spend your money responsibly, and you'll get a game on time like we promised.
Is that word for word what they said?
I'm slightly paraphrasing, Grant. I'm doing the alternative universe, perfect world, that's exactly what should have happened statement. Unfortunately, we don't live in that world now, do we? This week, it was announced that Broken Age will not be coming out this year. In fact, it's not finished. Even more, in fact... they can't afford to finish it. What's happened is they have spent the 3.3 million, I think it was, 3 million, something like that, and they've run out of money.
It's not entirely true that necessarily they've spent it. Isn't it that when they actually started making it, they kind of realised that the game they wanted to make was twice as big as the one they thought they wanted to make, so they needed more money, was it not?
I think that's been one of the issues because people have said, let's cover what's actually going to happen. What they've said is that we are unable to finish the game using the money that we currently have. Hmm. However, rather than going back to Kickstarter and saying, doing another project and saying, we need more money, give us more money, what they have suggested is a different solution. What they want to do is release it on early access on Steam, but only the first half. So they trim down what they've got, release it as like chapter one, and then people can pay for that early access on Steam, and then using the money they get from that, they'll be able to finance the rest of the game, which will be released at a slightly later date, as a free update a few months down the line. That's the proposition that they've put out there.
Is it? Do Kickstarter people not get it for free, though? They have to buy it again?
Well, no, I don't know. The idea is that I assume anyone who's paid the over the whatever it was, because I'm sure it was like pay $10 or $20 or you get a free copy for iOS, then yes. I don't know about whether you get a free copy on Steam, and technically it won't officially be released on Steam. It will be on Steam Early Access. Yeah.
But I thought all mention of the iOS version has gone quiet, hasn't it? I think this
is... Well, quite possibly. That's one of the problems. They haven't said much about it because they spent most of the week, they spent most of the past couple of days kind of deflecting people, calling them con artists, mostly. Keith, what's your take on all of this? Do you think that this is a valid thing that Tim has done? Are they being responsible by releasing the first half so you get something and then financing it this way? Or do you think this is a little insidious?
I don't know whether it was being reported badly when it first kind of broke, because I kind of saw it on Twitter and people were quite angry. And I assumed, actually, my fault not reading too much into it at the time, that they just literally were asking for more money. which would have been very bad and embarrassing. This is quite interesting, and surely by doing it this way, actually they'll end up making a lot less money than they would have done if the people who buy that early access one then get the whole thing, the rest of it, as an update for free later. Then they're almost kind of halving a portion of the revenue they were going to take.
Yeah.
So it's kind of almost acceptable. It's just embarrassing, and it kind of all of the whole Kickstarter thing. And I'm not comfortable. I tweeted this earlier in the week. I'm not comfortable with people who are big names using Kickstarter, which is ironic because they're the only ones who actually succeed. But it's like not. I mean, I have no idea about Schaefer's financial situation. He's, you know, I have no idea about Molyneux's financial situation. But all of these big names going to Kickstarter, it bothers me a little bit because I think they have other options. The smaller guys who then in amongst these big names haven't got a chance
now,
really.
Hold on.
Don't have other options.
Wasn't the reason that they went to Kickstarter because they didn't have the option because the pitch was essentially, you know, games like this don't get made anymore and therefore we're going to have to use Kickstarter to get this thing made.
I know the line, but I don't believe it.
I don't
believe that if you're, I mean, I'm not a fan, but I don't believe if you're one of these names. I mean, you know, I supported Broken Sword. You know, Charles Cecil, I'd say, is another name. I supported it just because I bought it. I wasn't particularly comfortable with them going that way because I'm pretty sure that they could probably get someone to back them to do that. You know, I in this current age of this era of gaming where it isn't all about, you know, being the best graphics, the best this, that, the other, I'm pretty sure they could get someone to back that. It just doesn't sit well with me that you had these big names all go to Kickstarter and then everyone kind of chased their tails and thought they were going to be the next Tim Schafer and a lot of them, especially in the UK, you know, just absolutely flopped. And now you've got one of the ones that's heralded as the big success, didn't even make enough money to finish it. So
let's take him at his word, right? Let's say that let's say that there is no market and therefore he had to go and get it kickstarted. Isn't this solution essentially sort of backwards to that idea? Like if Schaefer actually believed that, then isn't this idea of, well, we're going to make it with the, half of it with the Kickstarter money that we've got, and then we're going to sell it to the people that didn't kickstart it to make more money to make, like, I don't, if
yeah,
there
I mean,
isn't the, if there isn't
there
the market
is,
for it.
Well, there is, I mean, this is the, how the wheels are kind of slightly falling off the Kickstarter model is, to a degree, the assumption is you're giving them the money up front and then you get the game out. So potentially, you if you're making a game, you really should budget it that you won't really get a lot more revenue than you've already got. I mean, you might do, but I kind of think if you're getting the money to kind of take you halfway along and then kind of borrowing a bit to get to the end, in the assumption that you'll find another 100,000 people to buy the game, I think that's a bit of a problem for people. The thing that Schaefer said was about, basically, he wants to keep the IP for all his games now. He never wants to do a deal where basically he doesn't own the game. While these people can obviously raise money from publishers, for them to keep their what they see as now this new opportunity in indiedom. And the other thing is, I guess what they're looking at is not necessarily they're going to do a Clash of Clans or a Puzzle and Dragons, but the potential, the upside now for these games is so massive that they kind of think, well, I don't want to share that with the publisher.
It worries me because if we got to the stage now when someone, you know, obviously any cost that they estimate are a guess anyway, they can't ever say,
no,
this
that's
is exactly what it's going to cost. But when you underestimated it clearly by margin.
But actually what's really interesting is what this is doing is showing how the game process thing always worked. I mean, developers have always done this, but normally they just done it to publishers. They just said, oh, we said we could do it for 2 million quid, but actually, oh, we need 3 million quid. What are you gonna,
and,
you know? So it's actually exposing.
Schaefer's like a classic example of that. Didn't he take like, he took years making Psychonauts?
Yeah,
he's a
complete auteur, yeah.
Yeah, and with Brutal Legend, so.
What will happen if they go ahead with this plan, he puts it on Steam thingy, and not enough people buy it? So all those people who kickstarted it won't get it.
That's the thing about Kickstarter. I mean, I don't think it's been that well necessarily highlighted to people, but you've given them the money, you don't get it back. You know, that's
well,
it.
Yeah, I know.
Like, you might not get a game, might you? I mean,
it's just, it seems to me, it reminds me of like the housing crisis, really, where people were building flats that, you know, they haven't even taken deposits to sell, and they were just building these huge blocks of flats and stuff, and no one was buying. You know, it used to be the time they would only build something when there was demand for it. Then they kind of switched to just building things and hoping the demand would be there. And there was a lot of companies that, you know, went under. And it seems that Kickstarter has gone from this kind of promising hope to now you've got the lead, you know, the flag bearer now taking a massive punt on the fact that well, people are now going to want to buy this.
You know, it is interesting because at the time I think there's some people who probably like me were quite cynical that it would work, and it actually worked much better than we thought. But now, you know, when you see there are going to be these cratering things, I mean, equally we'll talk about it later, there's going to be stuff like Ouya where it's worked. It's a prime example. I guess the Pebble watch now is going on sale in retail in America, so there's been some examples where it's been absolutely brilliant. But obviously, it's just, you know, it is a business model like everything else, and it's not, doesn't mean you're gonna be successful. And the other thing, the reason that people like Molyneux and Schaefer do it is not per se for the money. It's because they can build a very large community, and once you've given them 20 quid, you're really interested in every video update. You know, I mean, I've kickstarted, how many things did I do? I've kickstarted like maybe four or five things, and not one of them has turned up yet. You know, the one that I kind of thought was most likely to turn up is GameStick. That's another unconsole thing. That's got delayed back again. You know, so
yeah.
So you know, the whole kind of conclusion is one not a very good one. And now I don't really think now we're not seeing those kind of big names coming to Kickstarter anymore, are we? I mean, that's kind of.
The other thing is that Schaefer himself, before he announced this, last week they had just finished crowdfunding another game called Massive Chalice, for which they got another $1 million. And only then did he turn around and go, oh, by the way, that first game? Yeah, we need more money for that. Which some people have suggested is a little bit cynical.
He gave a keynote talk at the Nordic Games Conference, and I was surprised, actually. I kind of thought he'd be not smart. He's obviously a smart guy, but on the business side of things, they were really obviously just like, completely lucked into it. I mean, they really didn't quite understand the dynamic that they'd created, and then suddenly they kind of thought, oh, we can do everything, we can do all these prototypes all the time, and we, you know, they really kind of thought they would just anything they touch was gonna basically be banked.
And it may not be the case as it stands early 2014 for part one of Broken Age. Whether part two comes, we'll have to wait and see. It depends if people buy it or not. Very quickly, we'll move on and talk about The Walking Dead 400 Days, which is this kind of in-between episode between Season 1, which you've already played, 5 episodes of it, and Season 2 of the series, which will be coming later. To tide us over, we've got this one-off episode. It contains 5 little sub-chapters, different storylines all included in the one package. They were a bit hazy on the release dates. They said it was because it's going on all platforms. It's appearing on like PSN and Vita and iOS and Android and, you know, not Android, maybe. Android later. But it's appearing in lots of different places, Xbox Live and such like. As it turned out, it was released in North America on the PS3 on July 2nd. So on Tuesday, it turned up there. However, the Vita version, which we thought would be appearing around about the same time, is going to be turning up when the full game turns up on the Vita in August.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of us were kind of like, oh, fantastic, here it comes. And then it didn't. And we're all like, oh, bugger. So you can still play it if you've got home consoles and whatnot, but if you're a Vita person, you have to wait a little longer. The iOS version, I think they're saying July 11th, so next week is the time.
They've run out of money, and you need to buy all these versions.
Because we need more zombies. Funds. We didn't realize how many zombies there were going to be in this game, and, you know, we underestimated our zombie budget. So yeah, should be July 11th for iOS and that, but, you know, fingers crossed. And Vita is going to be a little bit later. But I know that Mark has played some of it, and apparently it's really good. Everyone, again, the feedback's been massively positive. I've seen a lot of clucking on Twitter from some journos who've had a bash at it last night. And apparently it really stands up. There's a real variety in what you're doing, and it captures the tone, and it tides you over really well. So reviews will be coming sometime next week when it appears, hopefully. But things are looking promising. They haven't messed it up. Now then, talking about something completely on iOS, Ouya! Ouya! Ouya? Ouya? I don't know. Who cares?
Ouya!
It's the French. Ouya! That's the way to do it. Yeah, I mean, if you've been following Pocket Gamer at all, you will have noticed that in amongst all the mobile gaming stuff, we keep bringing up this thing called the Ouya. And if you follow Kickstarter, like with Broken Age, you'll know about this as well. It was a crowd-funded Android. We're calling them unconsoles, sort of. because it's basically an Android operating system in a box, or on a stick in the case of the game stick. But in this case, it's a box. And the idea is that it is an Android console you can plug into your television and then grab a controller and then play it as if it were a console. It came out. People have started to get them. There's been a whole... I mean, how was it staggered? Because I know if you pre-ordered it as a developer, you got it early, a couple of months earlier.
Yeah, they made... Well, no, I mean, normally that's the case. So the same thing with GameStick is they put out just to get
a dev version
to support it. They put out a dev version, which isn't the finished like nice kind of consumer finish. They just get basically the hardware out so people can get it to work.
It's got all
so they had a problem actually because the Kickstarter. I mean, Chris James, our MD, kickstarted it when it was originally kind of in there, and then I think he received his one the day that I got mine on pre-order through the retailer. So he was quite annoyed. He kept
Kickstarter
going, where is it?
Failing so, again, it seems.
Although he got his for $99 and I got mine for £199. So I guess he did get some advantage.
That's true.
Yeah. So it's interesting. It seems to be quite a spectrum of opinion about whether it's good or bad. It's like some people have been absolutely sniffy about it.
I have seen a lot of sniffy going on.
Have you seen more sniffy? I mean, I have to say, I was pretty sceptical and potentially am still quite sceptical about how... I think these kind of whatever we call them, consoles on consoles kind of thing, is... I think they came at the right time because obviously there was... The PlayStation Xbox kind of cycle got extended by a couple of years. So what normally would have happened is those, you know, PlayStation 4 would have come out a couple of years ago, or at least had a Christmas already, and everyone would just be, oh, it's the new console's come out. But because they got stretched out, there was suddenly this gap.
Where someone was desperate to buy a new piece of hardware.
Well, no, because people wanted something kind of different. And obviously, you know, it's not like, oh, I'm going to buy a PlayStation 4, or I'm going to buy an Ouya. You know, they're not competitive in that kind of zero-sum kind of game. But there is, it's kind of part of why I came up with the young console thing, there is a really interesting kind of bubble there, which is partly you have what we could see is like a traditional console thing where it's a bit of hardware you plug into the TV, but some of them are much different. Some of them, like, you know, just like the Green Throttle guys, just like a controller that you kind of connect to your phone already, and you connect that to the TV. And there's lots of people doing lots of different things. There's these guys, Blue Stack, who are doing like a Netflix version that you kind of get the box for free and you subscribe for like $7 a month. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on anyway. So Ouya is like the first and I guess the most traditional one of these things. And the thing is that I guess it has followed this tradition of being the console itself is actually really nicely made. I was very surprised. It's, you know, it's a small little box, but it's just nice. It's just pick it up. It's kind of heavier than you think. It's got like a metal, like a brushed, you know, aluminium, I guess, metal finish. Mm-hmm. You know, it feels heavier than you kind of think it might do. And the controller, I mean, that's something Mark Brown, our deputy editor, really hates the controller.
I've seen some negativity on that, apparent cheap and clicky and nasty.
No, it's definitely not.
You don't think so?
Again, it feels... I mean, certainly you pick it up, but it feels heavy. And again, it's got two... They're actual metal kind of plates, and you take them off because the batteries go in the what do you call them, the things you hold?
Prongs?
What are they? Prongs, I don't know. There's a word for them, the legs. When it walks, Keith, it's a funny walk. No, it just feels nice. And I don't know, maybe I'm the wrong person, because I know, you know, a new console comes out, and everyone's like, oh, what are the controllers like? And oh, what's the reach on the sticks? And everyone gets into incredible, fascinating detail about how much kind of push there is in the buttons and stuff. And I'm just like, oh, yeah.
It works
right to me.
Well, for me, actually, the console generation was decided by the controllers. Like, I
really?
Prefer. I massively prefer playing games on the Xbox. The Xbox controller is so much more comfortable than the PS3's. And if I sit there for 12 hours playing a game, I want to do it in comfort.
Mm. Yeah, that's literally what decided it for me as well. I think a lot of people go that way.
But you came to the wrong conclusion. That's
no,
terrible.
Because I have fingers, not child's fingers.
I had to buy those £3 clicky things you put on the back of the PS3.
Oh, they're awful. They're still awful. Yeah, those triggers are dreck.
But then I was talking to someone who goes, oh, there's, you know, competitive Call of Duty players search out on eBay the original Xbox controller that came out in blah blah blah, because when you wear them in, they're especially good. And I was like, oh goodness. Anyway, going back to earlier, so as a piece of hardware, it's surprisingly good. And I think if you spend like £100 or $99 and you know you're not getting something that's going to play Call of Duty 5, then you just be like, oh, this is really nice, plug it in the TV, worked, it's very straightforward to set up for me. You know, when it comes to the games, to be honest, there's nothing that you'll go, oh, this is amazing. Like, this is like the standout launch title. I mean, that you have been interesting, and a lot of these kind of people are trying to do some sort of exclusive stuff in terms of whether it's an exclusive, like a timed exclusive, like it tends to be these days. No one's really got the money to spend on prime exclusive games. But in terms of, you know, there's a lot of games we've probably played before, like, Super Crate Box. So, you know, it's Super Crate Box on a controller, you know, it's pretty nice. I mean, it's not like we didn't play that before on a PC to a degree. But
yeah,
there's that, and there's Shadowrun, and there's a Final Fantasy III, I think, and there's You Don't Know Jack. There's a few of these kind of games that we've played before on Android and iOS, but they're not kind of like the key ones you would have. And then they've got some of these exclusive ones. So there's one called Towerfall, which is quite nice. It's a four-player game, and actually a lot of the games on Ouya support the PlayStation 3 or the Xbox 360 controller anyway. Just as
I'd heard that. That's good,
so,
I suppose.
From what I understand, it's not supported by the system. The games developers have to kind of support it themselves. Or obviously, why would you not do it? So most of them do that. So then there's another game called Chrono Blade, which is an exclusive Ouya game, but at the moment they've only got like a small demo on it. The other nice thing about Ouya games, I never know, is they're all, when you get them, they're either totally free with in-app purchase, or there's a timed. So actually, I was playing
demo system, like On Live did that as well.
Yeah, so like Mini Squadron, I think you have ten minutes to play, and then you can have to, you know, buy it or whatever. So you can at least get some sort of experience. So, you know, I think it's like an early adopter kind of geeky toy. I've been quite impressed with it. And Mark Brown has just put up an article about the top 10 games on there. And he's been quite impressed with it as well. So.
Okay. I've been very, very, very tempted to pick one up. It does look... The other thing that matters to me about all these consoles, aside from the controller, is the UI, and it does look very slick.
Yeah.
I saw some videos. It looks quite smart, yeah.
I mean, I guess it's one of these things that, you know, in a year's, you know, in 6 months' time, will you be switching on again? Obviously, the whole thing they're kind of going on is, well, I think what they're going to do is, like, focus on indie stuff in particular. I think actually Double Fine are doing a game for them. They'll be exclusive for if he gets the money, I suppose. But, I mean, I think their idea is, because at the moment this is a Tegra 3 chip, so at the moment they'll go, next year we'll put out one with a Tegra 4. I mean, I don't know whether people will necessarily want to go on that annual update thing.
So
in a year's time, you might go, oh, that was kind of interesting, I played that a little bit, and then put it in a box with all your other consoles. So.
Well, my question is, for me, the reason that seemed interesting in an Android console is because at some point, or probably has already happened, you hack it, you get Google Play on there, so you can download anything and everything.
Yeah.
And then everyone just goes about turning it into an emulation device. I mean, we've already got something up on the site about how you turn it into a SNES. I'm sure you can do it for almost every, you know, oldish console under the sun.
That is something that it seems that they've tiptoed around a little bit, because obviously, apparently Game, which is the UK retailer, was actually kind of selling it as a SNES emulator.
Ooh, yeah.
Posted in stores, so they had to take that. I don't know if it's just one store or something, but they've had to take some advertising down saying, do this. So,
minefield.
And even when you boot up a new year, so you basically have the kind of storefront, the curated storefront, but then you have one called, I think it's called Make, and that's designed for developers to like sideload and start putting games on it. So I think for the hacking type, and kind of people on Android tend to be a bit more that, and they want to kind of root everything and break it. So I think it probably will gain some sort of audience with people who kind of want to do that.
But for the greater population at large, Pete, are you going to grab one of these bad boys?
Because my Nintendo 64 stopped working the other day. So
good enough. Yep. That'll do. Yeah, I'll try and find have a go at some point.
I guess the other one to see is there's this GameStick one coming out, I think, end of July.
Yeah. Which is just a little USB stick, if you haven't seen it. It looks like a HDMI port on it. You just plug
straight in the TV. So, and that one will support, they're supporting all Bluetooth controllers will support that as well. So it may, I mean, they're slightly cheaper, but it may be that one's, and they definitely have more games because they already run a smart TV game, Android game backend.
And another very nice UI. they both look slick as, really, for something you would think, you know, not amateur, but for companies that kind of come out of nowhere. Making something that looks, you know, every bit as now as something that we're going to be paying several hundred pounds for.
I can see you just like sitting back on your chair, just like flicking through the menus for hours back and
forth. It's the kind of thing I would do. Yeah, what lovely
so
fonts.
Smooth. Look at those fonts. Beautiful.
Games, what games?
Exactly.
Problem is, it's kind of at the moment fighting a bit of a wave of negative press. Or everything I've seen, most of what I've seen is people calling it rubbish. We've been more positive than most people.
Yeah, but the people who are dismissing it are the sort of like traditional games outlets, the places that were like 4 years ago, like mobile phone games. Hey, Larry, get a load of this. Like, they're the people who are making all these sort of like, oh, what is all this like like Android home console stuff. Like, oh, it's a load of old rubbish. Like, they're the spaces that aren't fully grasping that this is like a new interim way of like playing slightly smaller games. Like, I mean, there's clearly a market for it.
I mean, I definitely think for me the thing with stuff like Ouya is there's always going to be the comparison is you're playing on a big TV, so it's always going to be but the new Call of Duty's come out and you're playing. Yeah, why would I want to play Angry Birds on the TV? So I kind of think the momentum is with mobile games because the whole point is now we play for 5 minutes several times a day rather than sit down and play for a whole hour. You know, and if you look at the games that are making loads of money, you know, if you catch your clans, you wouldn't want to sit down and play it for. I mean, it's not designed. You can't play it that way. You know.
Well, we'll keep an eye on it. Obviously, if you're one of the few who has got one, you can now find the like top 10 games that are out on it right now. You can see John's first impressions thing where he goes through all the actual hardware, gives you an in-depth description of everything, and you can see whether it might be for you or not. Maybe not. Okay, so this week we're going to be doing things slightly different. It's not just going to be iOS releases, we're going to be covering the full spectrum. Which is good, because not much out on iOS this week. Bit of a cavernous black hole. I don't know if it's because it was American Independence Day at the moment. The house is being blown up and they're all distracted by the aliens, I guess.
The other thing is, if they launch a game on today, which is American Independence Day, then obviously as soon as it goes live, you find loads of bugs and you have to then work to fix them all. So I assume they've just said, well, everyone's going to be on holiday, so we don't want to release a game on Thursday because we have to be...
Because they're all very drunk and shaking their fist across the Atlantic at the British...
I think it means it'll be quite busy next week.
Yeah, and we'll probably get a huge glut of them turn up. But at the moment, not a great deal came out. The one thing that we will mention, which was significant, is Limbo. If you remember back to, I think, 2010, we talked about it last week, it's that quirky Xbox Live platforming puzzler, I guess you would call it. I won't say too much about it because I've been playing it and will mention it later, but it's £2.99 and I think $4.99, that makes it. And not to spoil the surprise, but it's good. It's translated well. So there was at least one release worth getting excited about.
How much limboing do you have to do?
Surprisingly little limboing. I think you've pictured a different game there.
Well, no, hold on. So Moody, yeah. Am I getting this right? Moody.
Yes.
Black and white.
Yep.
Small boy.
Yes.
Limboing.
You're so close.
Oh.
So close, Peter. Don't worry, all will be revealed slightly later on. Okay. If you happen to be of the Android persuasion, then you've got, again, not a great deal out this week, but you do have another one of those Kemco RPGs. They do like releasing all their RPGs, Kemco.
Yeah.
If you're in any way an Android RPG fan, you've probably encountered a billion of these things. They're all kind of 16-bit style RPG things in the vein of Final Fantasies and Zeldas and all that. The latest one they've got out is called Cross Hearts Arcadia. It's slightly different because this time, instead of just fighting creatures and wandering around doing turn-based combat, you get to have a pet with you as well.
Yes. Which
seems to be the thing now, because Arcane Legends, the big old multiplayer MMORPG they had out on iOS and Android, that had a pet system as well. That seems to be the thing to spice up your RPG experience. Aside from that, it's pretty much the same deal. You're going to be collecting gear and fighting monsters and all that usual stuff you do. I've played a couple of these games from Kemco. They're fine.
resounding success then.
But they're not bad, but they're just, you know, much of a muchness. They're all the kind of same, really. And some of the translation is pretty ropey. Some of them look quite good, in fairness, but I haven't been... I find them difficult to tell one from another.
Yeah.
Because they just keep churning them out and they're all pretty much the same. But I guess there's a market for it. They must like it. You can get it right now. It's £1.99 or $2.99 on the Google Play Store. You can have a little look. If, however, you have one of them handheld consoles, perhaps you've got, a PS Vita. Keith, have you got a PS Vita?
Yeah, it's over there.
It's over there.
It has a black screen and dust all over it.
Oh, really? That's because you were playing it all last week, and then you accidentally dropped it down the back of the sofa and got it dusty. Yeah.
I've said before, it's not even mine, it's John's. And John bought it and had it delivered here because he was away, and said, I'll have it back when the first big game comes out. And it's still here.
That's a damning.
It's a lovely machine that just has no use.
Oh, well, maybe you can find some use for it. Some people do. Peter, you like it, don't you?
Yeah, the Vita is amazing. 3DS is amazing. This is weird, though.
I know,
this
isn't
is
it?
Weird. This feels weird talking about 3DS and Vita. I don't like it. I want to just go back.
Can I talk about Atari Lynx and Sega Game Gear and stuff like that?
No. They are dead.
They've got as many games as bloody as Vita has.
Oh, how dead?
Yeah, probably.
That's not true.
They're as relevant. I'll get the 3DO out.
There are games, Keith. Games like Kung Fu Rabbit.
Yes.
There you go. What a segue. It's apparently a bit like Super Meat Boy meets League of Evil. In fact, I think I played this because this was a mobile game, right?
Yes.
Yeah, this came from mobile. There you go. We gave it a bronze award, no less. How's about that? And you can get it for free on Android. But if you want to buy it on PS Vita, you get to pay £3.99 for it.
Yep.
That's a bargain. Although, oh, no, wait, that other thing.
Although I will say, what it was interesting at E3 is Sony having quite a big push to get indie developers to develop for Vita, and obviously cross Vita and PS3, and obviously they're going forward, they're looking to roll out the whole platform. So actually, because those games, they can, a game that will be like free or 99 cents on Google Play or iOS will be charged for, say, $4 or $5 on Vita or through PlayStation Network. Developers actually quite like it. So I think there's an interesting shift. I wouldn't say it's a massive shift happening, but there's an interesting kind of little wave of developers who just like, certainly, and I think Sony probably giving them a bit of money to do it as well. But I was surprised that people talking about, we're doing this for Vita.
I'm going to drop a name here.
Oh.
I'm going to drop a name. I met Rami from Vlambeer.
Oh, yeah.
A week and a bit ago. And we got, you know, we just got chatting, you know, just me and Rami hanging out.
You go way back, yeah.
Yeah, go way back. And we were sort of chatting about Vita, and one of the reasons, like, he's so excited about it, and the fact that he's bringing, like, Luftrausers to Vita and not to mobile, is, like, apparently Sony are just, like, an absolutely beautiful company to work with at the moment. Like, they're just really easygoing, and they're, like the support for the indie scene is, like, really ace. Like, we had Limbo, like, a few weeks ago, like that came to review. I think it was about a month ago now, and like obviously Luftrausers and like Doodle God and all that sort of stuff. Like, it's just all coming over at the moment.
And if you happen to watch the E3 announcement, then you saw they did a whole thing of, look at all the indies we're bringing to PS4, and they pulled up about 8 screens with people playing indie games on them and the different developers. They're making, wearing it as a badge of honor, that whole indie thing.
Yeah,
they did, but I like to be painfully cynical about this.
Please do. Yes,
that's unlike
Keith,
you.
Prime,
yes, and the guy they have in the UK, at least, I forget his name now, who runs the kind of picking up indies for Vita, is very, very passionate about it. But to be honest, the only reason they're doing it is because no one was buying them anyway. So, I mean, Vita's problem, as anyone who follows me on Twitter will know, and I spout about this all the time, but Vita's problem was it launches essentially as a PS3 in your hand, and just the same mistake they made with the PSP, which was a PS2 in your hand. Suddenly they realized, actually, no one wants that because they've already got the console, and if they want to play console games, they play it on their console. So then they're thinking, right, what can we do with this thing? What can we do? Okay, let's make it this kind of indie mecca that people can buy. But the problem is that people don't buy a 200 and whatever pound handheld for indie games. I mean, they don't buy that.
I think some people can. I think some people can. I mean, I think the bigger issue is still pricing. I mean, they basically need to keep, almost like, I think as we discussed before, Keith, you know, they almost like need to put $50 on the price of a PS4 and give it away with it. I mean, they just need to get volume out there, I think.
They're attempting to sell what is at the moment a niche console by adding a load of niche games to it.
Keith, actually, no. Farming Simulator is coming to Vita for American owners this week.
Wow.
Thank you. So
I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say.
That content was met with the silence it deserved.
Farming. It is simulating farming.
Yes, there's Farming Simulator coming.
The whole problem was kind of summarizing what John said in that developers are loving it because they're charging $5 for a game that is a fifth of the price on iPhone or Android. So yeah, they might love the fact that it's going to sit there for $5, but no one's going to buy it, you know, because they'll think, well, why would I buy it on this machine when I can already get it on the phone I already own for a fifth of the price?
What seems to be the case, you know, I was talking to a pretty well-known iOS developer whose last game, it wasn't anything amazing, but it was like a, you know, really well-produced kind of marble popper. And he made, I think, less than $2,000 on iOS, and he got featured and stuff. And they're like, if they can go to it, like, to Sony and get like 10 grand, you know. The thing is, they're just making more at the moment, even though there's not many Vitas out there or people are playing on PS3s and stuff, they're making more money doing that. You know, they're going to do both of them, not going to do either or.
But what I mean is, on a consumer podcast, that means nothing, does it? I mean, that just means that Sony's paying out to try and get a lot of indies on it. And perhaps they're attracted by that same old, you know, the same reason why you get particular developers who love BlackBerry or Windows Phone. Because, yeah, there's less consumers, but there's less also crowded. You know, there's more chance of them being spotted. But apart from that, I mean, that means nothing to consumers. There's no reason that anyone would now think, oh, I must go and buy one.
No, it's definitely price. I mean, price is a thing that's stopping Vita. I mean, they need to sort out the prices.
I think it's price, pitching is everything. They've completely mishandled what it is and what it should have been. And they're panicking now and thinking, right, okay, let's shove a load of indie games on it. Let's give it some kind of USP. But, I mean, that's not why people buy handhelds.
But in terms of actually support and so forth, like, they were sort of saying at their big press conference, you know, once people do get hold of a Vita, they are quite dedicated and they do spend quite a fair amount of money software once they've got it. I think it's a little bit harsh to sort of say, well, now they're trying to do some things to appeal to a new audience, like it's a bad thing.
But the thing is that it does matter where things come from, because they're playing with this indie field now, but if it doesn't take off, they'll drop it like a stone because they're not actually that bothered. And that does matter if you're going to go out and buy one. And if in 6 months' time they think, right, okay, this strategy isn't working, we need to do something completely else with it, let's launch a new model and let's go back to what it was doing before or whatever, and they'll drop that indie scene straight away. I mean, that's the whole point. This isn't Sony isn't this great big hive of, you know, indie love. It's a massive multinational corporation, and they're looking at a product that's failing and thinking, what can we do for it? And if I was a consumer, I don't think it's going to work anyway as a strategy. I don't think if you put that on a shelf, it somehow makes that a more valuable proposition to you. And B, I wouldn't count on them following up for too long either, because again, when PS4 launches, no one in the mass market is buying a PS4 because it's got some random indie game that they've seen on YouTube once. They're buying it because it's got some big shooter they've seen. You know, that's what's going to sell PS4. So it gets you a lot of goodwill. But both of these things, it's not really, I don't really buy it. It's just kind of a bit of a cynical marketing ploy, really.
Well, if you have already bought into it and you currently have a Vita, after that, a tidal wave of cynicism from Mr. Andrew.
I only say it because I care, and I was one of the people.
It's tough love.
Generally, when I saw PS Vita, I loved it and thought it had so much potential, and it does, but it's just been, they have no idea what they're doing with it. Yeah. It's sad.
Well, what they are releasing, just really quickly while we battle them off, while we got them here, Total Recall is coming out, which is a twin-stick shooter, which also came from iOS and we thought was kind of boring. So there you go. Look forward to that. As Peter mentioned, we've got Farming Simulator.
Yes.
Yes. So you can, you know, because there's no other, I can't think of a single platform where you can grow farms with people in perhaps maybe a vill.
It's
of
a
some kind.
Name, isn't it? Yeah. Farming Simulator. Wow.
I know.
It's
that's
not,
a,
yeah,
unique.
It's totally different.
I don't care in the slightest. In fact, I just reviewed. I did a video review for Agricola. I think it's called Agricola, but I got called out on the pronunciation, which is another farming thing. But it's based on a board game and it's actually quite good. Whereas I assume this is just another one of those boring farming simulators. you can also get Velocity Ultra, which is a space-based shooter. Apparently, that's really good. It's $7.49 or about $5, I suppose, and apparently worth it. Mm-hmm. And if you are, if you're a Little Big Planet person, there's a free Little Big Planet costume that you get. Yeah, and some Moto GP13 stuff.
So, Keith, what do you think about the 3DS?
Yeah, if you're a 3DS owner, then you've got some eShop releases that came out this week too. Project X Zone, which is apparently a crossover tactical RPG, which gives you a whole wave of characters. There's an awesome picture up with this article, which has just got everybody. So it's got people from Resident Evil, Street Fighter, Mega Man, you've got Tekken characters, Space Channel 5 characters, who, to be fair, are in everything, and Darkstalkers, and it's some big, mad RPG doodad. It's not cheap. It's £27.99, and we're about to start playing it, and so we're going to have reviews up presently. So keep your ears to the ground for that one. But I want to see what happens when Jin Kazama punches Mega Man in the face, or maybe punches Ulula. Ulula? Ulula. Is it?
What? Why? Why? What are you saying about Jin? Has he got a problem with like
punching people? Well, to be fair, he's got that glove and he just wants to punch people in the face. That's what you have a big glove like that for, isn't it?
Is this devil facial Jin punching? Or normal Jin?
Oh, God. He's such a gamer. Jesus. I'll skip the dress to play Magic Bubbles. Actually, no, if you're listening to this and you have kids and you're into that thing, there is a game called Dress to Play Magic Bubbles. Which is a dressing-up game mixed with a kind of Buster Move mechanic. Lovely. So if you have something for the wee ones, that might be nice. Or if you like dressing people up and then shooting them with little bubbles or whatever, then knock yourself out. Mighty Switch Force, though, is down to £3.59, which is a lot cheaper than the 5-6 quid they usually ask. So, and that's a good one, is Mighty Switch Force. If you're a US listener, then Deer Hunting King... Oh, I can't even begin to drum up fake enthusiasm for this. It doesn't look very good, basically.
You shoot defenseless animals with high-velocity weapons.
Yeah, but the graphics look shoddy, and it doesn't look very good.
I was always a poor deer. Honestly, I used to play those hunting games on Java, and you just feel so guilty.
They look at you, they're like, why would you kill me, Keith? And Keith, you killed loads of them!
Yeah, you did.
I know, and then I played the game as well.
And you watched Bambi, and you laughed. You laughed when his Bambi died.
You're next, tragic. Bambi.
Yeah, that's disgusting. So there you go. There's a bunch of updates. Next week, hopefully, we'll have more for you in the way of iOS, but we'll be covering the broader spectrum from here on in. All right, and what we're going to do lastly is a slight adjustment. We're going to be talking about what we've been playing, but there's been a slight name switch up here. So this week we're all going to
come sit upon my throne of games.
Pretty good, sir. I understand that you have been playing online magical mobile devices of late. Care, sit upon the throne of games. Don't sue me, anybody, please. Sit on the throne of games and tell us about the games that you've been playing. Who is first to take a seat upon the throne? Sir Peter.
Hello.
Hark thine posterior upon the throne of games.
All right. 2 weeks ago, I promised that I'd talk about Minecraft next week, but actually what happened is I went to Amsterdam and, it was bad. And,
oh, really?
Yes, it's really good. I nearly missed my flight home. It was that good.
That good.
So I've been playing Minecraft when I can on my iPhone to kick things off on this multi-format reboot for the podcast.
You're living in the past, Peter.
I know. I'm going to play... I've got a copy of Grand Theft Auto 2 for the Game Boy Color sitting next to me. I'm going to play that for next week. Do you know what? Minecraft is really good. If you haven't played it or don't know about it, then you're probably listening to the wrong podcast. But also, it's a game where you run around a blocky world and you create things using lots of different materials that are available to you. So if you're the creative type, then you might create the Death Star. If you're me, then you might set something on fire by mistake. If you're Keith, then you might create a giant phallus in the background somewhere and then take a picture of it. And that is generally what people do. This mobile version is a very good recreation of the PC original, but the problem with it is twofold. One, the controls just aren't right. You know,
they're a bit yanky, aren't they? I've played this and they're a bit
on the right. So first person shooters, right? I think we agree that they don't really work on touch screens at the moment too well, mm-hmm. and there are some people who are trying to make that happen, and it's not really working out. And this is the same. You know, it's not action-packed. If you play the survival mode instead of the creation mode, then you do have to go up against some enemies. But really, you don't often do that because the best strategy is to just kind of dig and hide away from them and hide away in a cave, which is quite fun. I quite like the survival mode. Creation mode, not so much because I'm not a very creative person. But the second problem with it is that... it really isn't conducive to multiplayer. I've got the updated version, which allows you to go online with realms.
Oh, yeah, you have been using the paid-for system. Are you coughing up for that?
No, you see, this is the thing. Like, there wasn't a single part of me. There was never an experience and a situation where I thought to myself, do you know what, I'd love to get online now. Because first things first, like, when I'm playing it, I was usually traveling and therefore using data. And I've got a limited contract and there's no way that I'm going to play an online game like that with limited data, not a chance. And second of all, it just doesn't feel as natural to play and as sort of, like I say, conducive to multiplayer. Like, there's no proper chat functionality that isn't text based. And are you really going to go out of your way to play a spin-off of the main game in multiplayer to create something big and show off to your friends, which you don't really do? It just doesn't feel to me the best way of experiencing that game. I really enjoyed it, and it is a brilliant, brilliant version of that game, but it's a brilliant version of a game that doesn't really work when you're out and about. I don't know. Because we often talk about Minecraft on the podcast in tangential ways, talking about news and stuff. You guys haven't really played it much, have you?
I played it on the PC, but not much on mobile. I played it on Android for a bit, and I just wasn't sold by the controls. I found it more fiddly than anything else, and that sort of took me out of it, I guess.
Yeah, it feels like a very expensive, slight waste of time. The survival stuff is really, really good. But once you've done that once, the world's just randomly generated. And once you've done it once, there isn't really much else to see. And I think also the mobile one has got some serious, system issues whereby... So I had a cave and I had some doors on the outside. And if you keep all of the doors closed, theoretically, no monsters will be able to get you, right? Will be able to come into your little hole, hidey hole. So you'll be able to keep mining away for materials to build new things to keep surviving and that sort of thing. But I had a huge house, essentially, in the middle of this cave. And I would go from one end to the other. And if I did that, it felt like it was almost like the engine wasn't keeping up with it. So right at the other end, a skeleton would pop up. And then I'd be trapped inside with a skeleton, and then I'd be absolutely boned.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. And so, I just kind of feel like it's not really... It's well done, but like the rest of first-person games on iOS, it's like the team that developed it solved a problem that didn't need to be solved.
Well, a negative edict handed down from the... Although, games,
it's kind of interesting though, because it has sold about the pocket version sold something ridiculous 8 million.
Yeah.
So and I wonder. I did exactly the same thing. I said when the Xperia Play one came out, so the Android phone with the controls, with the physical controls, I thought, oh, I'll get Minecraft, because I think it was an exclusive actually on it. And then I played it literally for about an hour and was like, oh, okay, I'm kind of. It didn't have survival mode in it. It just had the sandbox mode. And I was like, well, this is kind of interesting, but I don't really see why I would do that on a little phone.
Exactly.
It's crazy.
It just doesn't feel like. It feels like its home is the PC because of all of the modding, because of all the online stuff, and to take it to multiplayer, and it just doesn't feel right. And it's strange because I feel exactly the same way about the I'm sort of interested to see Terraria, and I played a bit of what's that other one? There's another survival-ish Minecrafty 2D game, basically. I played one of those for review, and again, it just feels like unless you're sat at home with a Wi-Fi connection, it just doesn't work because none of the social stuff works, and because of that, it's well, what's the point?
But 5 million people can't be wrong, or can they?
They
7
can.
Million,
right? I think they can. I agree. Oh, well, never mind. Thank you for that. Those wise words there, kind sir. Please, disembark the throne of games, if you will, because we need to make room for John.
Hello.
Hello.
I finally finished my...
You've finished your Fast and Furious review, haven't you? Which we've been talking about for about a month.
Yeah, at least a month. Well, I started.
What did you decide in the end?
Yeah, I liked it. I gave it an 8. The thing is, it is very, very simple. So compared to Drag Racer or CSR Racing, it's kind of funny because I've actually just started playing CSR Racing again for something else. And you kind of forget how when that game came out, I was kind of like, oh, that's not very complicated gameplay. But compared to Fast and Furious 6, it's like rocket science.
Oh, I see.
It's really nice. It's really uncomplicated. So CSR, you get loads of cars thrown at you, and Drag Racing, you can go in and change the gear ratios and stuff. And this one, you basically just like tap a couple of times on the screen. But I'm playing this very, really odd game called Ghost Train. And okay. I'm struggling to even think if it's a game, really. So it's one of these ones where I'm not sure whether I'm just doing something completely wrong. I mean, it could just be I'm just completely not. I've got the wrong.
Are you holding it upside down?
Yeah, it could be. So basically, Ghost Train, as you imagine, really nice pixel art stuff. And there's a train.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a engine, and then like carriages, and then little kind of ghost people get on them, and they have little characters and stuff. It's really artwork is really nicely done, and you kind of you have gold and you collect kind of soul gems and stuff. But you can't direct the train to go anywhere. So each of the little people want to go somewhere. So some want to go to Chicago, and some want to go to the burial ground, and some want to go. Blah, blah, blah. You can unlock lots of different carriages, but there's one carriage where they'll actually kind of get out of the train when it arrives at the platform. So if they kind of you want to put the people who are obviously going to the burial ground in that one, and you have to move them if they're you kind of have to move people around in the train so they're in the right place when it goes to the platform.
I see. So you're distributing.
But that's it. That's like I'm just sure I'm doing something completely bonkersly wrong, because that's all you seem to do.
What's it, Alan? Is it on iOS or?
Yeah, maybe someone from Good Beans developer can tell me what to do. I mean, I think the other thing, I think there's loads of things you can unlock, but it's just they're really expensive.
That sounds a lot like because I didn't want to talk about it, but now I will. That sounds a bit like my experience so far of Doodle God. Like, it's like there's loads to unlock. It sounds like there's loads to unlock, but there's nothing to actually do.
I never got the Doodle God games. They've been really successful, but it was kind of interesting, isn't it, when you kind of combine the elements together and sometimes you get interesting stuff happens. But it seems like I'd do it for 10 minutes and then I didn't.
It seems like there's a lot of these sort of non-games game elements.
And I have to say, so this Ghost Train thing is, I mean, it's graphically really, really beautiful. It's really nicely done. There's little bats flying around that you can tap on to get extra bat points or something. I don't know. But I'm just like really struggling to like, it's like playing a racing game and not realizing you have to press accelerate or something. I'm just thinking, is there something really fundamental that I'm not doing? So it's like, I can't see what the game is.
All right then, that's food for thought anyway. You may step down from the throne of games, and I shall step upon, and let's just have a little... Oh, it's quite comfy. Oh, I think I'm sitting on a NES, though.
Yeah.
Oh, that's all. It's all spiky and 8-bit. Oh,
is it,
nightmare.
Is it an Ouya, this emulating one?
Oh, it could be. Actually, I better double check that. Oh, no, it's an actual NES, because I'm keeping it real, as Jay-Z probably says. I've been playing Limbo, as I mentioned before, and it's pretty good. They've done a really good job of porting it over. If you haven't played it before, it's a puzzle platformer. You're guiding a boy through Limbo. That's the pitch. There's no on-screen instructions. There are no floating controls. There are no menus. There's no nothing. You just get dropped into the game. You wake up, and you have to work out what to do and where to go, which is kind of what's nice about it. It's about a three-hour game. You can do it in pretty much one straight sitting, and you just guide this boy through, and at first it's just jumping over things and clearing chasms and that sort of stuff. Then you start introducing puzzle elements about picking stuff up, dragging it around, moving bear traps to capture things. Then mechanisms start to come into play, so you're flipping switches and activating these rusty old machines that are moving up and down. You're avoiding a lot of people and enemies, and eventually you're doing things like playing around with gravity. So it throws quite a lot of stuff at you, and at no point does it tell you how to do it. You have to work it all out as you go, which is a lot of where the fun comes from. The other source of fun for me is kind of how cruel the game is. It's a bleak game. You're supposed to be stuck in Limbo, and Limbo is filled with little children which seem to want to kill you with air darts and strange creatures and, most impressively, giant spiders. You wouldn't like this, Peter.
I've played it.
Oh, you've played it. Did the spider bit wig you out then?
Yeah, it did actually. because you think it's a... I don't want to spoil it too much, but you do not think that it is a spider when you first see it.
No, it's cleverly introduced, isn't it?
James, I've got a question for you.
Go on then. What about it?
So, Limbo inspired a lot of black and white moody platformers.
It really
how
did.
How does it feel to go back and play it now that whole sort of black and white platform indie platformer has become a bit of a joke, in so much as like everyone's done one? Does it change your opinion of it?
Not really, because for me, going back and playing Limbo now reminds you why people copied it in the first place.
Right.
The a lot of the imitations, there was like a direct ripoff called Lad that was awful. And there have been some other ones that were okay that we've mentioned before. There's one called Totem Runner, that's pretty good. There's one called Oscura, I think it is. I want to say Obscura, but I think it's Oscura. And that was kind of okay as well. But the reason that Limbo was so good is because it's more than just like, this is a platformer with platforming mechanics. They have really tried to focus on things like atmosphere, which I am a fan of. I know people get a bit like, oh, it's moody, who cares? I care. I like it when games are moody and dark and a bit twisted. And this is precisely that. And it's not just the surface thing. It does look good. It does look lovely. And it's very slickly presented. And there's no heads-up display. And I really like that. But the important thing is that the gameplay, the way that it introduces new element, is very organic, very clever. And at no point does it tell you what to do. You have to work it out. You're never really stuck for huge amounts of time, just long enough so you go, ugh, and then you get it and you go, yes, I'm a god, and then fist pump the air to no one in particular. But that gives you that kind of nice reward feeling that you're looking for. If anything, if I had to criticize, it peaks early, I think. The last end, I was surprised when it finished, when I first played it back on the Xbox, because I was like, oh, is that the end? Oh.
Yeah.
I got that feeling because at the beginning there is some really awesome stuff that happens and it kind of gives you chills and it gives you that kind of thrill. And then, I thought it tapered out slightly. But that is a minor criticism because it is fantastic. What's more, you get it for £2.99 as opposed to about, £8, £10 you would get it. The controls work very well. The only thing that's a bit annoying is you have to swipe up to jump with your thumb. So there's no floating joypad, but it works like a floating joypad. So you put your thumb on the screen and just drag it left to go left, drag it right to go right. But in order to jump, you have to flick up with your with your other thumb. And I'd probably rather it was just a tap. That would have made it a little bit better to do some precision platforming. So that's the compromise, I feel. But aside from that, it's by no means a deal breaker, and it's a great game, and if you haven't played it, I really think you should. And it's by far the best thing out this week by a billion miles. So yes, that's me done. I shall step off this Game of Thrones and get this NES cartridge out of the crack of my ass.
You mean Throne of Games?
Throne of Games, that one. Yes, definitely don't sue me.
I don't know what this Game of Thrones is.
I've got no idea. I think
you're overestimating the kind of people that listen to our
I'm assuming that HBO executives subscribe to our podcast. They play it in boardrooms. I know they do. So Keith, it is left to you, kind sir, to sit upon the throne.
Just sitting after you lot have all been sat on there with your sweat.
It's nice and warm. Don't complain.
I can have a towel to put on it, please, or something. Yeah.
Oh God.
Or a bit
you're going to get the lurgy, are you?
Yeah, I don't want to comment too much. I have played a game kind of on and off the last couple of weeks. I'm not very far into it, though. I've been playing, what's it called? Home.
Oh, no,
A Unique Horror Adventure, is that its full title? It's interesting. It recommends that you play it in the dark with a pair of headphones on. Which I did do, yeah, for the first kind of 20 minutes I did. It recommends actually you play it all three in one go, which I did not, because I had to go to sleep. but I could see why they do that, because it's a horror game. You wake up in a house, and you don't know why you're there. And basically the game is kind of, it's a bit point and clicky, really. You're walking around. It's 2D, and you only actually see on the screen a kind of circle of torchlight at either side of the guy. Mm. The rest of the screen is black and remains so. So you just kind of wander around with your torch, and you can interact with various elements in this house. And you're kind of learning more about the story, or what it wants you to think the story is. I'm betting there's obviously a big twist at some point near the end, which I'm not aware of yet, but... yeah, so you wake up in this house, there's kind of blood around the place. It looks like something very dodgy is going on down in the kind of attic, and you want to get back.
Someone's selling pirate DVDs.
A little more dodgy than that, even. The kind of thing that former podcast host Will Wilson might have been into.
Oh! is that like the word dungeon might be involved?
Yeah. Maybe a little bit more hardcore than that. But and you're not sure why you got there. The last thing you remember is being at home with your wife and you want to get home. But this house is absolutely massive. So kind of even walking around to it, there's so many rooms to walk into and ladders to climb down and stuff. It's like a maze. I've forgotten where I am in this house, but essentially you're trying to piece together what's happened. And the brilliant thing about it is that because you're wearing headphones and there's kind of no noise, just a dripping of pipes and stuff. And when things actually do happen, like a door slams or something, you do kind of freak out a little bit. And it's one of those games that's built on the tension of something about to happen. Mm. So the further I'm getting into this house, the less I want to be honest, because the more convinced I am that something horrible is going to be around the corner. I'm going to discover something that's going to be on Crime Watch next week or something. It's going to be, you know, it's a unique, I mean, it's pixel arty kind of looks. So you could say, well, that's kind of overdone, but it kind of, it pulls it off. And it's just really nicely, this whole idea of only being able to see where the torchlight is, it's just a nice little touch that separates it from what could otherwise be. I mean, because all you're doing is walking left and right by touching left or right on the screen and then tapping on objects that are that kind of get lit up with this white light, and you know you can interact with them, and that's basically all you're doing. And you know, it's very old-fashioned in that when he's thinking things, the whole screen goes black and you just get text on the screen, like, you know, a book adventure or something, and you say yes or did I do this, yes or no. It's kind of harking back to the whole era of things, and yeah, I need to get back to it, but I have a good feeling that it's not something to get rubbish, to be honest. So having also been playing it in the middle of while playing The Last of Us on PS3, it's probably not a good idea, because it's putting certain things in my mind that probably definitely aren't there.
Yeah, that's a bleak double bill there.
Yeah, it kind of ties in nicely, though. It kind of feels like in a similar universe, maybe. It's just kind of gore and, yeah. But I at the moment, I would recommend it. It's certainly different.
Well, I'm keen. I saw it when it appeared on Steam, and it looked like kind of fun. I never got around to playing it, but that sounds like a lark. So that's on iOS now, right?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes, of course it is, because this isn't just an iOS podcast.
No, we have to say what's now.
It's on iOS and Atari Lynx.
And Atari Lynx, excellent. Well, I'll have to get mine out of the closet.
I'm too busy playing California Games.
Oh, God. Yeah, if you get that reference, then bravo, all of you. Of both of you who got that reference, well done. Okay, that sort of wraps it up then. I guess that's the end of the first. I don't know whether to call this podcast number one or not. I want to kind of go back to number one, but I'm not sure. I think that'll mess up iTunes completely. So technically it's 233, but it's sort of number one because it's a whole new world. It's the next generation, Pocket Gamer. Next generation, which means that
should have all been replaced.
I'm already bold, so I'm all right for that. So I've got the bold thing. I've got the Picard going on. so someone has to grow a silly goatee and only sit on chairs by throwing their leg over the top.
I think I would be Riker.
That is Riker, though. You have to argue over who's going to be Riker now.
No, that's not Riker.
Yeah, it's Riker has the little goatee, and then whenever he sits on a chair, he does it by swinging his leg over the back of the chair. Go to YouTube. Anyone who hasn't seen this is funny as hell. Next generation thing. No one realised this. Is Riker sits down in the weirdest way and does it throughout the series, and you never notice. But just go, like, Riker sits down on YouTube.
I would, you know, I'd rather just not be involved in any kind of Star Trek thing. Really.
More of a Wars man.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, you can be the Time Lord. How about that? Is that better?
Yeah, that's much
better. Yeah.
You win.
Doctor Who with not DR dot who, no, Doctor Who, because otherwise you'll throw a tantrum.
He's just the Doctor. He's not called Mr. Who. He's not.
Anyway, we said we'd talk about non-iOS things. This is a little off the radar, perhaps. But thanks for sticking with us this far. Come back, because, like I say, if you're an iOS fan, you've been listening for the last 233 episodes, thanks ever so much. It's been fantastico. And stick with us, because as you can tell, we're going to be talking about a lot of iOS things as well. But if you happen to have a Game Gear tucked away or an Atari Lynx, or any other, you know, handheld console, something like that, Android, whatever. Get this in your ears, because we're going to be talking about it all. If it's important, and if it happened, and if it's interesting, we'll be chatting about it. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, all the usual stuff. Read everything we've talked about today on the site, PG and PG Biz, and we will catch you for another new podcast next week. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.